verses 1 through 5 today is what we want to take a look at in 2 Timothy 3, 1 through 5. And it's a section that Paul writes, and it's prophetic at the time that he writes it. And I guess what I can say on the heels of this morning's message about Sodom and Gomorrah is it's really hard to overstate the dangers of the sin nature, the pitfalls of the sin nature. And it's kind of interesting as Paul writes this, he does write it, and he's looking ahead. And so he's really telling Timothy, as bad as things are, they're going to get even a little worse. And it's kind of interesting as in this section, he talks about difficult times. There'll be difficult times, and he's looking ahead. But he doesn't focus in this section on the circumstances, situations that may arise, but he focuses on the characteristics of people, of humans. And so we see here that these people that he's going to describe the characteristics of are probably involved in the local church, in Christendom. And so it's interesting because you see the dangers, and you see the dangers that these, as we won't get there today, but as you go further down the context, you see the dangers that these could pose to other Christians and what they're about. But let's go ahead and start in 2 Timothy 3:1. And Paul writes here to Timothy, "But know this, that in the last days, perilous times shall come." And so, from verses 2 and on, depending on how we count, but we're going to have about 20 different characteristics of these people. 20. Now, I want to back up into verse 1. He says, "Know this." And the word for to know this is to experientially know this. So Paul anticipates that Timothy is going to have the opportunity to see this at least begin to come true. And he says, "In the last days." Now, in your English, you have the article "the." But in the Greek, the article's not there. So it's not the specific last days, but it's a quality of last days. "But experientially know this," he's telling Timothy, "that in the quality of the last days, difficult times shall come." They will come. And the word that I just translated difficult, the King James translates it perilous. But it has the idea of hard, rugged. It can even mean furious or ferocious. Ferocious. And so he's talking about difficult, hard, rugged times shall come in a quality of the last days. Now, we have an illustration back in Matthew in chapter 8 of this word that's translated perilous or difficult. So let's go back to Matthew 8 and verse 28. Now we see this is during the Lord's earthly ministry. Okay, and when he was come to the other side into the country of the Gergesenes, there met him two possessed with devils or demons, coming out of the tombs, exceeding fierce. And so here's our word, and it's translated fierce here in the King James. And if you have an interlinear, you see they translate it dangerous. They're fierce or dangerous, so that no man might pass by that way. So you hear it, and so we just get an idea of this. We see this word used here of these that are possessed with demons. And so anyway, it has the idea of their rugged or ferocious, hard, difficult times. Now, first thing I want to say is we're not talking about the tribulation. We absolutely are not talking about the tribulation. And let's just turn to 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. The 2 Thessalonians chapter... Uh-oh, what did I do? Let's go look at verse 2 and 3. Down a wrong verse. Well, I'm going to back up to verse 1. It says, "Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ, even our gathering together unto him, that ye be not soon shaken from the mind, or be troubled neither, not by, but just through spirit, or through word, nor through a letter, as from us. As that the day of Christ," or and there's a textual problem, so it probably the day of the Lord is at hand. They're not to be troubled. "Let no man deceive you by any means. For the day shall not come, except there come, not a falling, but a departure." I believe this is a reference to the rapture. "Unless there come a departure away first, and that man of sin," this the man of lawlessness, "be revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God, or that is worshipped, so that he, as a God, sits in the temple of God, showing himself that he is a God. And so here you see, though, that Christians aren't going to be here for the tribulation. The departure, I believe, that's referenced to in verse 3, I interpret that to be a reference to the rapture. That's the next thing that's on God's prophetic calendar, is the rapture. And after the rapture, the departure, there will be a revealing. The man of lawlessness will be revealed. When that happens, though, we're not going to be here. And so we don't need to get too caught up with as far as who that might be. And we know from many other passages that Christians will not go through the tribulation, which is a time where God will be pouring his wrath and judgment out on the earth. And so as we look at this in the quality of the last days, difficult times shall come. So I want to go back to 2 Timothy now in chapter 3. I just thought we should at least make sure we're clear that we're not talking about the tribulation. Although as Paul wrote this, he was looking future, and he expected Timothy to see mankind, human beings, become worse and worse. And so the Bible is, I think, pretty clear that the further we as a human race get from the fall, the worse we become as a race. Humans are not evolving. People would like to think that we're becoming better and better. That's not the case. And throughout history, it's been an ebb and flow of how man's sin nature has been manifested. And there's been times throughout history that that manifestation has been more and more plain and more and more evil. And I think, as we talk about a quality of last days, that's what we're talking about. Because as we move to verse 2, we're going to begin a description of human beings, of man. And you're going to see some characteristics in here. And it's interesting because a lot of these characteristics are actually looked at in a positive light now in our society. People find some of these characteristics admirable. They'll admire other people for having these particular characteristics. Now, the other thing I'd want to mention as we go down through this list is we start this list in 3:2. And as I said, if we counted them up, you could come up with 18 if you go through verse 4. Or 19, I guess, if characteristics. And if we count holding a form of godliness as a characteristic in verse 5, there's 20 characteristics listed in these five verses. And so, and I've pointed this out in the past as we've been here, but it's interesting, and I'll point out in verse 5, and we'll be back there, but they have a form of godliness. It's interesting. Because the word for form that they translated form, it's morphosis, is where we get our word morph, or it's the root that we get metamorphosis, but this is morphosis, and it has the idea of external appearance. It's an external form or appearance. So these guys, they have the external appearance or form of godliness, of showing out God's quality of life through human flesh. So it's interesting because now as we back up and we begin to go through these different characteristics, you're going to see that what's on the inside is not what's being reflected on the outside. If they have an outward form of godliness, we look on what's on the inside. And so it really comes back to here that evil fruit comes from an evil root. And so it doesn't matter how good it looks. If the root is bad, the fruit is bad. That's the bottom line. And so let's go ahead. And so, again, kind of interesting that here we are in looking at these verses at the same time Dave was where he's at in 2 Peter, but the timing is not up to us always, so that's the way it is. So first, in 3:2 now, for men shall be lovers of self. I'm going to go ahead and read the verse, and then we'll come back, and I'll just make a couple comments on each of these characteristics. For men shall be lovers of their own selves. I'll read the King James, and we'll change and comment as we go. Covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. There's eight lists, right? There are eight in the list, eight characteristics listed. And it's kind of seems important here because he starts off with lovers of self. Lovers of self. Self-centered. Ones that are fond of themselves. And I say lovers of self, it's the Greek word for philia. And so a lot of times it's translated lovers, but you know, it's not agape love. And so just to make that distinction, we'll try to use the word fond. So they're fond of themselves. Their intent is on one's own interest. They're selfish. These people are probably characterized by using their favorite word is I. I. They probably begin a lot of sentences with I. So it's interesting that he starts off this list of characteristics with self-lovers or fond of those that are fond of themselves. Because if you go back or just go a little further into verse 5, if we ended the list here, because it does change a little bit. But he says at the end of verse 4, it says, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. And so you see, kind of sandwiched in between these two, we have of this list of 18, if we keep our list to 3:2 through 3:4, we have lovers of self, and then in verse 4, the end of verse 4, lovers of pleasures rather than lovers of God. And so these lovers of self, or these ones that are fond of themselves, like I said, they're intent on their own interest, selfish. This is a characteristic of humans, in a quality of last days, of the last days. And let's move on to the second one. Lovers of money. Now, the King James translates this covetous, but it's just the word. It's a Greek compound word, phila, which is where we get love from, or fond. And then it's the word for money or silver. They're fond of money. They love money. Now, there's nothing wrong with money in and of itself, but when one makes money and rather than a means, makes it an end, and that becomes a priority, that is a problem. And that's for Christians, that can be a big problem. I was turned back to 1 Timothy in chapter 6, and I'm sure many of you will recall this verse in 1 Timothy 6:10. Now in verse 9 it says, they that are determining to be rich, and so it's not that they just desire, but they determine. And so we make that translations change in verse 9. They that are determining to be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and ruin. For the love of money, and so here's a form of our same word, for the love of money, or the fondness of money, is the root of all evil. And I'm just going to translate that, it's a root of all kinds of evil. Which while some covet after, they have erred from the faith and pierce themselves through with many sorrows. And so here, Paul gives a pretty stern warning against determining to be rich, or the love of money, making that really an end, and pursuing that, because in verse 11, he goes on and tells Timothy the things that he should be pursuing or following, and we've been there, but he says righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and meekness. And so lovers of money. So that's the second of the list in 2 Timothy 3:2. Lovers of money. Now, I won't go there just for time, but you can see this word used of the Pharisees back in Luke. In Luke chapter 16 and verse 14, it's used of the Pharisees, and in the King James they translate the word again, covetous. Now let's move on to the third characteristic, boastful. Boastful. And so these are characterized as those who indulge in bragging about themselves. You see these, they all kind of fit together. They indulge in bragging about themselves. It's kind of interesting. I've noticed, if you watch any news, you see there's some interest in the coming up election in 2012, and we have candidates who are starting to come out and show interest of that. And it's interesting, as I went and read through some of these, some of these came to mind when I have listened to certain people speak, and I see these characteristics. I see these characteristics, and it's here we're talking about characteristics, though, of humans, of mankind. And so boastful. Now we could go to Romans chapter 1 and verse 30, and this word boast, that is translated boastful, it's used two times in the New Testament, and you see it used again over in Romans 1:30, and we several of these words we have over in Romans 1:30, so maybe I'll wait to go there. And so boastful, though, they indulge in bragging about themselves. Number four of characteristics is they're proud. Proud. And the King James translates it proud. The New American Standard translates it arrogant. The ASV translates it haughty. But it's the idea of arrogant or showing oneself above others. It just literally means overtopping or showing above. And this is a word that we typically see translated as proud, and we can see it translated as proud in James chapter 4 and verse 6. But let's go ahead and go to 1 Peter 5:5, and you'll see the same word used there, and it's translated proud in 1 Peter 5:5. And it's used the same way in James 4:6, by the way. 1 Peter 5:5. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elders. Yes, and all of you be subject one to another, and be clothed with humility. For God resists the proud, and gives grace to the humble. So here you see the contrast of humble and proud, though, and proud. And so it's a characteristics of those, though, that will be living in a quality of the last days. Proud, or just overtopping, showing above, showing oneself above others. The fifth characteristic that we have listed in 2 Timothy 3:2 now is blasphemers. Blasphemers. And I see the New American Standard translates this word as revilers, but it's just the word blaspheme, or to blasphemers. What these do is they speak slanderous, though. They speak slanderous. They falsely represent others. That's kind of the idea. And we can get an illustration of this word back in the book of Acts, in chapter 6, in verse 11. This is during Stephen's arrest. And so let's take a look at Stephen in Acts chapter 6 and verse 11. Okay. In verse 10, and we see, and they were not able to resist the wisdom and the spirit by which he spake. When they suborned men, which said, we have heard him speak blasphemous against Moses and against God. And so here they're accusing Stephen of speaking slanderous or falsely representing Moses and God here. And then we're going to see it again in verse 13, that they're the ones who actually are the ones that are falsely representing. It says, Moses, starting in verse 12, and they stirred up the people and the elders and the scribes and came upon him and caught him and brought him to the council and set up false witnesses, which said, this man ceases not to speak blasphemous words against thy holy place and the law. And so here you see they're accusing Stephen of the very thing they're doing, speaking slanderous and falsely representing Stephen here. And so blasphemers, though, is a characteristic of man and a quality of the last days. Now here we come to the sixth, and we do have some youth in here, and I'm glad to say that none of our youth here come to mind when I read this term, but disobedient to parents. That's a characteristic of those in a quality of the last days. Is disobedient to parents. And so the idea, though, is they're just uncompliant. They just will not be persuaded to obey, is kind of the idea. Now, again, we see this word, it's used two times in the New Testament. And we see this used back over in Romans chapter 1 again. So let's go ahead and go back to Romans, because we've had a couple there. And we'll go back to Romans 1:30, and we see chapter 1 and verse 30. We'll back up maybe a little. And so we're looking at fallen mankind here, and let's just pick up in verse 28, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, in their full experiential knowledge, I think, and it says, God gave them over to a reprobate mind. The idea of reprobate is just unapproved mind. To do those things which are not proper, being filled with all kinds of unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness. And by the way, the word covetousness there, I believe, let me just check the Greek. Oh, no, that's the word for covetousness. My mistake. Maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit. Malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, and so we have a couple here in verse 30, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents. So three of the characteristics are listed there in verse 30. Without discernment, covenant breakers, which we're going to see in our list, without natural affection, that one's in our list, untrustworthy, unmerciful, who, fully knowing the judgment of God, that they which practice such things are worthy of death. That would be physical death there. Not only do the same, but have pleasure in them and do them. And so here we see an example of a man is not getting better. Man is far from healthy as a race. And we all know that too well. That's why we needed a Savior. And so let's go back to our list in 3:2. And so we just finished up with the sixth characteristic of these people, of disobedient to parents, though. Disobedient to parents. And then the next one is unthankful. Unthankful. And the New American Standard translates it ungrateful. But it's just really our word for grace with an alpha privative on it. And so it can mean ungrateful or unthankful. It just literally means they're ungracious. They're without grace. They're without grace. And so they're really, these would be characterized as being ungrateful for really any kindness or benefits received. Completely without grace. It's kind of the idea of there's a sense of entitlement. Does that sound like a characteristic that may be something we have in our society? Entitlement? Boy, it sounds like we may be in a quality of the last days. The eighth characteristic in our list. Unholy. Unholy. And so this word unholy, you can see an example of it used over in 1 Timothy 1:9 when it talks about there the law is made for the unholy and profane. But it has the idea of unholy as they don't respect or rever, they're not respecting or revering anything as sacred. Everything is common. Nothing is sacred. That's the idea of unholy here. And so we've looked at eight characteristics in verse 2, and we'll continue on with our ninth characteristic listed in verse 3. And he says here, without natural affection. So if you remember, that was also in the list over in Romans chapter 1. That was in verse 31, and it's used only two times in the New Testament. But it has the idea of this without natural affection. It has the idea of uncaring. There's an indifference or a disregard for the welfare of others. Well, that fits in really well with the very first thing in the list. Lovers of self. Lovers of self. And so the characteristic is of selfishness. And so naturally, without natural affection or uncaring, indifference or disregard for the welfare of others fits in with that. It's a me first. It's a me first characteristic. And then our tenth characteristic is truce breakers. Truce breakers. And that's in the King James. And the New American Standard translates it irreconcilable or silable. And so that's kind of the idea, is they're truce breakers. They, really, they, these are those that would be characterized by refusing to honor the vows of a truce. These are covenant breakers or truce breakers. In other words, their word doesn't mean a lot. And I hear that often, that in the old days, somebody's word used to mean something. But anymore, you got to be careful, because you can't take people at their word, because they'll break their word. That's describes mankind in a quality of the last days. They won't honor their vows. Has the idea, though, of, and these also can be characterized as refusing to enter into a truce. To enter into a truce or to terminate the state of hostilities. And so these can be characterized as those that are always at odds and, you know, never wanting to reconcile. Our 11th characteristic is false accusers. False accusers. And It's the Greek word diaboloi, or diaboloi, and it just literally means devils, devils, false accusers, constantly inventing and throwing accusations at others. That's a characteristic. Constantly inventing and throwing accusations at others. That's how the devil got that name. He's a slanderer. He's a diabolos. So false accusers. And then we come to the next term. It's the 12th in our list. And it says without self-control. And it's a hapax, but it has the idea of one that's not a master of oneself, intemperate. And so there's really a lack of self-control. They're not in charge of their own selves. Something else is taking the lead. It probably fits right along the lines of lovers of pleasures and lovers of themselves. The me first. Well, they're not a master of oneself. There's no self-discipline. If they want it, they take it. If it feels good, they do it. They're without self-control. Then we come to our 13th characteristic, and it's another hapax, which just means, when I say hapax, it just means it's there's only one occurrence in the New Testament. And the King James translates this fierce, fierce. And the New American Standard, they go ahead and they translate it brutal, brutal. And it has the idea, though, of savage and untamed-like, untamed, savage, brutal, like wild animals. It can be translated ferocious. But it just it's the word that we get the word for mild or gentle with an alpha privative. And so just literally they're ungentled or they're not mild. They're the opposite of gentle. And so fierce or savage, ferocious. And then we get down to the 14th verse or the 14th characteristic on our list and the last one in this verse. And they're despisers of good. Despisers of good. Now this is also a hapax, and it's a compound Greek word of phila, which is fondness or love, Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. So it's phila, so fond or with an alpha privative, so which tells you that they're not that, they're unloving. Of, and then the word agathos for good. They're unloving of that which is good. Good. Agathos good. Now, agathos good is that which brings an inner contentment and ultimately leads to happiness. Well, these guys are without fondness of good. So the King James translates it despisers of those that are good. The New American Standard translates it haters of good. Darby translates it having no love for what is good. And the American, the ASV translates it just no lovers of good. No lovers of good. And so, and, you know, if you want to... if you want to get these types of people that are characterized by these qualities upset, be doing good works, agathos works. They're not going to like that. They're despisers, they're haters of that which is good. Probably not only of good things and works, but also of people that are involved with agathos, good. Now you know that God is the source of agathos. And so these, though, are despisers or without fondness of good. So quite a list as we've looked at 14 so far, and we still have quite a few to go. And so as we move to the fourth verse in the third chapter, the 15th characteristic is they're traitors. Traitors. The idea of traitor is though a betrayer, betraying confidence and trust put in them. And so these are characterized, though, as ones that would betray confidence and trust put in them. If we went back to Luke, let's go ahead and we'll just go back to Luke chapter 6 and verse 16. And we see this, not surprisingly, used of Judas Iscariot. And so in Luke chapter 6 and verse 16. And so I'm not going to just, we won't work the context at all. We'll just look at the use here. It says, "And Judas, the brother of James, and Judas Iscariot, which also was the traitor." The traitor. And so you see that. And just literally who became a traitor or a betrayer is kind of the idea. A betrayer. And so as we go back into 2 Timothy and we look at the characteristics of man in a quality of the last days, we see that traitor or betrayers, just ones that really betray confidence or any trust that's put in them. And then our 16th characteristic in 2 Timothy 3:4, the King James translates this as heady, heady. And which is kind of an interesting translation. I didn't have a chance to go after the Old English on that one. But the Greek word just literally means such as fall forward. Plunge ahead, though, without forethought. The idea to act rashly. And so the New American Standard translates this word as reckless. Reckless. And so they're just... The King James Version translates it heady. And it's just such that just plunge ahead, though, without thinking. They're impulsive. They're impulsive. They're probably moving from their soul, and they act rashly. If we go back to Acts, we have an illustration of this word that was only used twice in the New Testament. So in Acts chapter 19 and verse 36, this is during a riot that was going on in Ephesus. And so in Acts 19 and verse 36, and let's go ahead and we can... We can pick up a little bit of context in verse 35. "And when the town clerk had appeased the people, he said, 'Ye men of Ephesus, what man is there that knoweth not how that the city of the Ephesians is a worshiper of the great goddess Diana, and of the image which fell down from Jupiter? Seeing then that these things cannot be spoken against, you ought to be quiet and to do nothing rashly.'" Rashly is how it's translated. That's our word, to do nothing rashly. The idea, though, to plunge ahead or to fall forward without any thought put to it. And so that'll be characteristics, though, of man and the quality of last days. And our 17th characteristic in 2 Timothy 3:4 now is... high-minded. High-minded is the King James translates it. And the idea of high-minded here has the idea, though, to be puffed up. To puffed up, to be blinded by pride. The New American Standard translates this word conceited. Conceited. They're puffed up. They know it all. They know it all. And so it's stated in a perfect passive participle. So the idea is they're in a state of being blinded by pride, puffed up. Their heads are in a cloud of pride, and they can't see. And so they're in a state with the continuing results. With continuing results that they're high-minded, conceited, puffed up. They're wrapped. Their head is wrapped in smoke or mist, and so they're completely blinded by their pride. They know it all. They know it all. They don't need anybody to tell them or to educate them, because they know best. They're high-minded. Then we get to this, the 18th, and I don't know if you'd want to separate these out as two separate characteristics, or you could put them as one. but it says, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God. Lovers of pleasures. And so the word love, it's again, it's phila, is the Greek root, so fond. Just fond of pleasure rather than fond of God. Again, this goes back to self-absorption. There's no room for fondness of God. Their devotion is to self-indulgence. And so this really fits in with and the very first thing in our list, which was just fond of oneself. Fond of oneself. Now we move into verse 5, and I've already commented a little bit about this, because they're holding or having an outward or external form of godliness. Of godliness. Which is interesting, because this is something that a Christian is to be exercising himself unto, is unto godliness, manifesting, reflecting out Christ through human flesh, taking these bodies of corruption that have a sin nature, and by getting your mind in the right place, counting yourself dead to the sin nature and alive unto God, allowing the Holy Spirit to fill you, and using the fruit from the Spirit, directing it appropriately so we can reflect out Christ as in a mirror. The end result of that is godliness. And these have an external form or appearance of this. And so they look pretty good on the surface. But it's interesting, in the very first verse, Paul said, experientially know this. So you don't go just by looks. You can listen to what people say. You can see what people do. And yeah, they may look like a nice, shiny piece of fruit on the outside. But remember, from a rotten root comes rotten fruit. And you see here that these, it says, but having denied the power thereof. And so they look an external appearance, like they're having a form or of godliness. But they deny the power thereof. Remember, these guys, what was the first thing on the list? Self, I. That's where their power, their ability is coming from. Self, they may probably be getting some help from another enemy. But they're denying the power thereof of true godliness So our competence isn't out from ourself when we live the Christian life. We can't in and of ourselves reflect out Christ. Our competence is from God. And so we're completely dependent upon Him to be able to fulfill the new commandment. But these here, they're the denying the power thereof. Now, the word denying, and we've looked at it in the past in 2 Timothy. We saw it used three times in two verses in 2 Timothy 2:12 and 13. And just literally means to say no, to say no. These are saying no to the power, the inherent ability. The inherent ability. Now, remember when we talk about power, Paul told Timothy, and let me turn back to 2 Timothy, in chapter 1 and verse 7, I don't want 1 Timothy now. Paul told Timothy in 2 Timothy chapter 1 verse 7, "For God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power, inherent ability, and of love, and of a saved frame of mind." And then he goes on in verse 8, and he tells Timothy to be co-suffering evil for the gospel according to the power of God, and to the inherent power of God. And really, in the Christian life, that's where our ability comes from. It doesn't come from self. It absolutely does not come from self. But in a quality of the last days, these that are characterized by these things, it'll come from self. The focus is on self. And remember, that's when we start talking about agape love, which is the one commandment that we have, is to agape one another as He agaped. That's other-centered. Other-centered, not self-centered. Now, Paul comes with a strong exhortation on how to respond to these that are characterized by these things. He says, "From such, turn away." And he says it in a present middle imperative. It's kind of the idea of keep turning away from these. Keep turning away from these. In other words, recognize the character and recognize the danger. Recognize the danger and keep turning away. Just literally turn oneself away from, avoid. And so, as we'll stop here today, we're going to see we're not done with talking about this type of man who are characterized by these things and a quality of the last days, because we're going to see a little bit more about them in the following verses. And so, quite a list. He says, "Experientially know this, that in the quality of the last days, difficult times will come." And then he focuses on the characteristics of the people. The people, it seems as if they're going to be the reason for the difficult time. That there's things that can be recognized in the character. And when that character is recognized, Timothy is expected to recognize the danger. And then he's also expected to behave in a manner that's consistent with what Paul would teach, and he's told to keep turning away from these. So we'll end there, and we'll pick up the next time, Lord willing, in verse 6. Father, thank you for this day. And we're just grateful for the opportunities to be together in your word. And we anticipate the fellowship and the time in your word in the coming week. And we just pray that your spirit would be working in the saints, that we might be in a position to be receiving the messages that you have for us. May you bless us now and this week in Christ's name. Amen.